Welcome to the first episode of Cushman & Wakefield's Bottom Line podcast, where we delve into the minds of leaders, exploring their insights, philosophies, and the impact they have on the business world. Today, I have the pleasure to host Alok Agarwal, Managing Director and CEO of Brookfield Properties India. He is responsible for providing strategic leadership across design, development, finance, leasing, tenant relationships, and corporate strategy for Brookfield's India business. Hi, Alok. Great to have you here, as always. Great to meet you. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you. I remember I first met you, I think around 2011 or 2012, at least a good 12 to 13 years ago. And you were with Milestone Capital then. And I remember meeting you at your Bombay office here. And what struck me in that meeting was usually when you meet fund managers, asset managers, they are there's usually a level of, I shouldn't say this, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but there's a level of arrogance, there's a level of sort of, you know, being out there. And you struck to me as someone who's kind of really, is a nice person, very approachable, very professional, and yet very direct. I mean, I know you as a very direct person, but you just put that across in the nicest possible way. And therefore, that makes you really, really approachable. Now you are the CEO of one of the very large REITs in India. You work for Brookfield, which has in excess of $300 billion of asset under management, a significantly large role, but you are still the same man. And this is just not me speaking. When I speak to my colleagues and people, everybody's got the same view. I'm just wondering, how do you actually keep yourself grounded?
Thanks, Anshul. Thank you for kind words. Well, I mean, I think you're kind of giving a lot of weight to me. That's probably not required. I think most important is ultimately, my sense is, the first thing is you need to be a nice human being. And if you're not that, there's nothing matters. So that is what I think and try to imbibe to the extent possible. And that's my core philosophy. Try to be a nice person. If that you can be, rest everything. There's nothing matters.
Yeah, it's easy for sometimes big jobs to get into your head, isn't it? But you know, you just got to keep it out, right? I mean, you control big amount of capital, big amount of real estate, and a large team.
Actually, again, so here again, the philosophy is, you know, and that's what I tell my team. While we are landlords, but we have to go with a service mindset. Yeah. You know, so the concept of real estate has changed in last, I would say, 10 years or 15 years, and how we look at it. We, if all the people, we feel we owe a lot to our stakeholders, be it tenants, be our investors, be our partners, and we have to make them happy. So I don't think there's anything, I mean, whatever you control, it's for something, it's for to deliver on something. I don't think one has to have airs about it. One has to make it work for the benefit of your stakeholders. That's what I feel. I don't get a sense of keeping it, you know, having control on these things. Ultimately, you have to deliver.
I think that's an excellent point. I think once you understand that you're in a service industry, yeah, that really drives behaviors. And that's, I think, a very important point for a number of people to kind of consider, isn't it? You know, people like you and me, kind of maybe giving away our age here, but we kind of started our career somewhere in early 90s, right? The choices are very limited. Of course, you could be an engineer, which you are. You could be a doctor. You could be an accountant. But the first few years, the first sort of, you know, journey which kind of led us into real estate has always been interesting with people. So what's your story? What's the interesting story about being an IIT Delhi, IITian from IIT Delhi, and then kind of, you know, ultimately landing up in real estate? Real estate fund management business, I should say.
And actually for me, it's a bit different. I started, yes, you're right, late 80s. Worked as an engineer for almost 15 years. So, you know, I was handling projects, working with contracting companies, working with not developing companies, but largely engineering and contracting companies.
So you were handling nuts and bolts.
Nuts and bolts on the ground. And in 15 years, I didn't realize, you know, the world has moved ahead and I'm still handling projects. And early 2000, And there was always a wish to do an MBA, which I missed out after my IIT. And then in 2002, Indian School of Business started in India. And I just felt that they have probably started for me, because that was a one-year course. I couldn't afford to do a two-year course. I want to do it full-time, not a part-time, not an executive program. I applied for ISB, got admission to ISB, and then we are doing the course. And in 2003 and 4, if you know, the FDI in real estate has not opened up really. And there are not many jobs. I either go back to my engineering job or I do something else. And there was an option to, a lot of BPO jobs were coming. You know, I was 35, 36 at that time. There were a lot of BPO jobs were coming. I could have taken a BPO job. But then I paused and I thought about it. And I felt I have spent 4 years with IIT, 15 years of my experience, 18 years of my experience, core experience, I would let go if I go for a BPO job. And one thing I noted in my economics class, that even in 2003 and 4, the housing starts, the number of housing start was a lead indicator for a GDP growth. I thought if in US, a country like US, if housing start, real estate is a lead indicator for GDP, I mean, India, it's going to kind of a catch up, and India also is going to go on the same path. So these are two factors which kind of pushed me to kind of look for a career in real estate and not kind of do a flip-flop. And I you know, joined a real estate company at 40% salary than what, you know, I was offered in some of the other fields. But I'm glad I took that decision, and I'm happy about it.
Clearly, I mean, and it's fantastic. It's much like an engineer, right? Look at the stats and then, you know, be very data driven and take a decision based on that.
And look at long term, that's important.
But did you think you'll be heading a significant REIT? REITs were a concept at that point in time, but you know, your career has really skyrocketed, right? And did you sort of in 2003-04, whenever you finished your ISB, did your vision take you this far?
So fortunately, unfortunately, I think I don't want to think about tomorrow, because we are not sure what will happen tomorrow. So we'll take things as they come. We'll cross the bridge when we reach there. So I've never thought about my career that I'm going to become a CEO or a vice president or something. We keep doing our work. We keep doing our work with, you know, our best of abilities. And then, you know, what is destined, what we deserve, it's going to come to us. And even if you don't become you don't take a big designation, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Life is okay.
Right. As long as you're happy with what you're doing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just maybe stick for a moment to your engineering career, which is hardcore engineering career. Do you miss anything from those sort of 15 years?
Not really, because I used to get a lot of my engineering career in my present job. So the great thing about my present job is we do development, we do leasing, we do operations. You know, there's a lot of engineering to that. And then, of course, there's a lot of business kind of into that. So I don't really miss it, actually. You know, I'm getting best of both worlds.
So the guys in the engineering team at in your team must be really unhappy. He's got a boss who kind of knows a lot about the nuts and bolts.
Actually, in a different way, I think I should admit it here. I always think about people, engineers who are out of sight, out of mind, people who are in buildings but not seen.
Yeah.
People who are on project sites but not seen, who are delivering your buildings but don't get recognition.
Yeah.
So I think I have a bit of a, I would say, soft corner of the people who are not seen there, and I think I do kind of take care of them.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're unhappy, probably. Yeah. I hope they value. I mean, think that, you know, it's good. Somebody's thinking about them.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. I think to make sure that the soldiers are recognized, isn't it? The people on the side, people who are working behind the scenes, because often that gets goes unrecognized. So coming to your sort of current role, and you've been in this role first as a private company, and then as a public, CEO of a public company. How was sort of, you know, if you compare the two roles in private domain and now in public domain, you know, what's changed for you?
Of course, now it's almost, more than 3 years in a public company. And whatever we may say, while in compliances, I think we were taking care of all compliances even when we were private. So I don't think that's making any difference.
But I think what makes a difference is that in a public company, and don't get me wrong, I'm saying that, but that's also important because commercial real estate has gone through COVID during the last 3 years. We went public in 2021, and the impact of COVID on commercial real estate was there for first two and a half years. Of course, we are out of that now. So in terms of being in a public company, managing a public company, your focus on earnings on quarter-to-quarter basis, and especially on REIT because you have to give dividends on quarter-to-quarter basis, your distribution per unit, I think this matters quite a lot. You have to be watchful. In a public company, a quarter here and there, no, we can catch up.
In a private company.
We can discuss internally, but here you are making commitments to investors, to public. Yeah. I think you have to be more mindful of what to say and what to deliver.
Yeah.
So there's a pressure.
Yeah.
In terms of being a public company, goes without saying.
Yeah. And how do you sort of see the office market in the future, right? And you've got a large portfolio to manage, but I think lots has changed since COVID. I think the industry is almost turned on its head. The way we use office now, the way occupiers are kind of thinking about office, the way developers, owners have to regear their portfolio. How do you see the industry today as opposed to 5 years ago? And where do you think the office market's kind of going?
Yeah, so actually at least my view is, and that's the sense we get, that office market is in a pretty sweet spot right now. We have gone through a tough phase of last three to four years. And you know better than us that, you know, nowadays we are almost doing a 80 million square feet of a gross leasing from last 2 years. And every year the leasing is kind of a, you know, the number is going up. At least we think this number will keep going up and up for next 5 to 10 years. So leasing numbers going up. When you see all of the occupiers pre-COVID, their headcount has gone from all up by 20 to 40%, whereas their real estate portfolios are down by 20 to 40%. Yeah. Many of the companies.
Yeah.
This means there's no scope to surrender anything more. You know.
Yeah.
Now any growth which happens, they need office.
Yeah.
So again, that's very encouraging. Then GCC is something, we all know about GCCs, they are coming to India. Today GCCs, it was about cost 5 years back, today it is about cost as well as talent.
Yeah.
And almost 2 million people these GCCs employ. Their revenues are expected to grow from about $45 billion to about $100 billion in next 5 years. Upside case could be 120, so the demand for office from GCC is continuing. Domestic companies are doing pretty well. They are taking a lot of space. They have more than banks, they have become tech companies. Indian GDP growth of 6.5-7% is driving domestic demand. And then government reforms of converting, you know, SEG spaces to non-SEG spaces, that also has been a game changer. Then all this is tailwind, and then there's a looming, you know, I would say interest cut. So all that is also kind of a, you know, we are hoping for that. So I think industry is very, very sweet spot right now. And for the next 5 to 10 years, we see a good growth of industry. So this is industry. And on a capital market side, we have seen advent of REITs, 4 REITs in last 5 years. So that has also changed, and we can talk more about it, you know. So that also has happened.
Fantastic. I could not have summarized the real estate market better. So, you know, I think that was great, and I'm going to hear that recording again for sure. Just to memorize some of the things that you said, which is amazing. Just maybe another quick question on GCCs, right? What we are also seeing is that the global capability centers for most companies are being used to drive innovation and productivity gains for their business globally,
yeah.
Right? So there's cost, there's talent, but they're using the talent to innovate on products and processes which can then drive productivity and growth in companies globally. So it's actually become a growth center.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's become so important. Are you seeing GCCs demanding space which is of different quality, different type? Is there a differentiation that's happening? Is that driving improvement in the real estate quality or office real estate quality in India?
No, that's a good question, interesting question. And I would say yes, GCCs are, I mean, their requirement of offices as compared to some of the other companies, you know, they could be asking for better locations. They're not fighting for the last penny, you know, they're, but I would say this, that the need for upgradation of office is not just being just driven by GCCs. Every company, every occupier wants a better office.
And you see that both the domestic and multinationals?
Everybody, you know, everybody wants a better office because, you know, people are coming back to office. There's a work from home. People have to be in office. Office has to be nice. You have to make sure that employees come back to office. They enjoy they feel home away from home.
Yeah.
They need to feel that it's a home away from home. So what's happening about 7 years back, or what has changed? And we can talk about GCC, but what has really changed 7 years back? Amenities was good to have. Food court, you know, people will ask, there's a food court, there's a crèche. Today, that's assumed. I mean, you can't have a building.
It's become hygiene. Yeah.
It's become hygiene. Then, you know, 5 years back, we'll discuss, should we have a gold rating, platinum rating? Today, somebody like us, you know, somebody like Brookfield, and even large institutional developers, they're all going for platinum buildings, platinum rated campus. So, you know, very high in terms of ESG, very high in terms of amenities. And then in terms of locations also, as again, you know, people have to be brought back to offices. People want the offices in better locations. So demand for better offices is kind of moving up. And people are not just looking at offices. At least we believe we want to provide them experience.
Yeah.
You know, so as soon as they enter their office campus, the journey starts from maybe 1 kilometer even before the campus. We maintain the roads, we clean the roads, and that's what some of the institution developers do, and then they enter the gate. That journey has to be very, very kind of a seamless, and that's what is, you know, yeah. That's how offices are changing. Yeah.
So you mentioned about the ESG. So of course, the environmental sustainability part of it, plus of course the social part of it, which is employee wellness, experience, amenities, and so on and so forth. Let's just stick to the sustainability part a bit. You mentioned gold, platinum rating have become hygiene. What is driving that? Because that's not a policy-driven situation in India. Now, if you think about Singapore, think about Australia, some of these developed markets, the whole markets move to whatever the highest rating in their respective countries are in relation to environment. But that's policy-driven. You know, the dates set by the government and you just have to do it. What's driving you as Brookfield to reorganize your portfolio and upgrade your portfolio to better ratings?
So, Anshul, let me just correct myself. You know, our emphasis since 2015, when we started in India, was that we'll have portfolio buildings, you know, where ESG could be core. It's not just a talking point.
Yeah. And why was that? What were you saying?
Yeah, I think our belief has been that, you know, we as a leading developer, and if we will not kind of implement these measures, will not show the path to industry. Mm-hmm. Who will do it? Yeah. Just to give you an example, in Gurgaon, we had campuses which used to run on digi sets. Mm-hmm. We installed dedicated 66 kVA substations in each of the campuses to eliminate the need of digi sets. Now, if we do not set those examples, who is going to do it? Mm-hmm. So that's how it started in 2015, 2017, when we kind of came into India, when we started operation in India. But of course, today, I think it is all pervasive. Today, you know, you have to talk about E, you have to focus on your energy reduction, your water reduction, the waste emission has to reduce. The scope of ESG has gone very wide. We have provided ESG filters in our offices, so the quality of air is very clean. So I think this is coming very, very naturally. And today, I can tell you, if you sit down with a tenant, you can talk about the transaction, you can talk about the deal. That may happen, may not happen. The discussion on ESG has to happen.
Yeah.
And many of the tenants have global requirements.
Yeah.
They have to follow those norms.
Yeah.
Now they also kind of lean on us.
Yeah.
And we work together to make sure that their norms are met.
And that's a big change that's happened, isn't
that's,
it?
That's
the
a big
tenants
change.
Are also pushing for it.
Tenants also pushing it.
And you'll probably not be competitive if you don't. If you did not have a portfolio which was aligned.
That goes without saying. You have to have it, actually. If you don't have it, probably not be competitive and probably you will not get selected by many tenants. They will not come. They will not take a space with you.
Yeah. On a related note, of course, the Indian office story really started in early 2000s, right? So we had lots of sort of first generation IT buildings which got made very quickly. Market's been moving into premium category, I think, let's say around 2013, 2014 onwards, right? And developers started moving in creating more quality buildings in India. And today, I think it's almost become a norm that a quality building actually attracts more premium, attracts better occupancies, while the older portfolio is struggling across the country, right? What's your view on that? I mean, what can one do with the old portfolio? What are the options we have?
Yeah, I think so that's happening, and and it's not just about that older portfolio has a lower rent. I think some of the buildings, probably people are not going to occupy them, so they're going to remain vacant. There are a couple of options. If the policy allows and we can bring down some of the buildings, we can either make a new building, commercial building, or if there's a fungibility, we can make a hotel, we can make a residential, especially, you know, where FSIs have gone up, it makes more sense to bring down that old building and do a new development. That can happen. Now, if FSI has not gone up and we feel it doesn't make a lot of sense to demolish the building, then we can repurpose the building. We can, and we have done some of the buildings, you know, you can change lifts, you can structure life is about more than 50 years. You change the MEP, you change the lifts, you spend about 1500 rupees per square feet, and building could look new, except for the design elements,
of
which
course,
you can't change actually,
yeah,
which also you can change slightly.
Yeah.
So I think you can repurpose the building, you can demolish the building, and that's how you have to make it happen.
Great. We've got to ask a question about REIT, of course, because you're the expert. Obviously the REIT market in India started, let's say 2018, 2019, yeah. And we got three office REITs, one retail REIT, and it's becoming an asset class, and it's becoming a popular asset class for people to invest in, right? But recently we got the SM REIT regulation, which is open, which is quite the opposite spectrum of the big REITs, right? So what's your view on SM REITs?
I think SM REITs is an interesting concept. It has to yet to play out, but it gives more flexibility. Ticket size is smaller. People can identify the asset and then they can invest. You know, suppose they like one asset in a micro market, those people can pool together, you know, and come together, invest at 50 200 crore or 200 crore, occupy, take that asset. The yields could be higher. Now, when it necessarily not be office, you know, it can be office, it can be apartments also. So a lot of pluses. Now, when there's a single asset, there's also a risk of, I would say, the diversification benefit is not there. I think these things have to be way out, but I think a great move by regulator. How does it play out? It has to be seen, but it's going to bring a different set of investors in the market, and I would say overall it looks very positive.
Great. Risks to the real estate market in India? Anything that you see over the next sort of 4-5 years? Let's stick with the office segment.
I think we have to take asset-wise, mm-hmm. Yes. And when you talk about office segment, I would say whether there are risk. Of course, in 2019, nobody could have thought that, you know, 2020 COVID can happen. So those kind of risks, I don't think we can really.
So there's climate and health risk.
Yes, climate and health risk, which is always there. Then in some of the micro markets, there could be a flood risk, and that's one has to see. But I think one risk which is always there is, you know, when the supply comes, it comes in some of the markets. And so there's a risk micro market wise, you know, some of the micro markets can have a lot of supply. The demand may not be there. So supply gets concentrated whereas demand is coming to other markets. So I think that risk is always there, that demands come to infill locations. Mm-hmm. In centric locations, supply many times coming to peripheral locations.
There's a risk that often plays in my mind, and I think it's actually a supply side risk and not a demand side risk, right? Because as you mentioned, we are gross demand about 80 million square foot a year. If you think about supply, we are constructing about 50, 55 million square foot a year, roughly.
Yes.
So the supply is not able to keep up with the demand that at least we've seen in the last sort of 3 years, right? And if the projection of demand is going to continue at 70 plus million square foot a year,
right.
Do you see a supply side risk coming and therefore putting an upward pressure, significant upward pressure on the market?
So I don't know whether significant upward pressure. I think that's something probably you can tell us better. But we have seen rents firming up in last 12 to 18 months. We have seen sufficient kind of escalation in some of the micro markets. And that's what I'm saying. This is going to play, you know, micro market wise, it's going to play out. But we also have seen that if there's a shortage of supply, tenants probably would wait out. They would wait for consolidation. They will do build to suit, and you know, and that's how this risk has to be mitigated. But yes, in some of the micro markets, we have seen rents firming up and supply quite limited. That we all know.
Of course, when COVID hit, I think the many pundits are very quick to write off the office space and say this is never going to sort of, you know, come back. And I think even in the US, apart from maybe West Coast tech companies, this kind of return to office is beginning to happen, and there's good hybrid working, and the world's kind of settled into a hybrid mode. And as you said, the employment's kind of gone up in any case, so it's kind of offsetting the sort of drop in demand from hybrid. I think the next big sort of thing that people talk about, which I think is a lot more nebulous and hard to define, I think is artificial intelligence. And AI's effect in particular for large process-based organizations which need large offices. Do you have any view on that? I think it's quite nebulous, but do you have any view on that?
So, Ashul, we have seen this kind of a playing out many times, this kind of phenomena when people, you know, there was a time when people said people will stop flying or people don't come into offices. Mm. I don't think changes happen sometimes, but they are not so kind of a sweeping. Our sense is that, yes, again, same thing, artificial intelligence is going to lead to change in kind of a jobs people will do. It will, some jobs will lose the kind of a, some jobs will be lost, but different kind of a jobs will come up. Overall, difficult to say, but at least my perception is it shouldn't impact the office market. That's my perception, and that's what we feel. I don't think there's going to be a lot of job lost on a raw basis.
Being a major institutional player in the real estate space in India, IPCs like Cushman and Wakefield are big partners to you. What's your advice, what's your expectation from IPCs as the industry evolves? What's your advice to IPCs as we continue to partner you in the growth of the real estate industry in India?
So, Anshul, I think even at present, you know, IPCs are doing a phenomenal job, and so with companies like yours. One thing is, of course, the kind of experience and transparency they are bringing to industry, that's phenomenal. Then kind of a diverse services they're providing in terms of consulting, valuation, facility management, operations, PMC. I think they're there in every field, and they're doing a great job, and we value that offerings. My sense is, again, that we probably have to work together. We have to work together, and we keep working together, but that bond has to get stronger. And we also have to see how we can create center of excellences in some of the fields, like maybe operations, maybe project management, some of the other offerings, how to work out and create offerings which tenants like in terms of offering workspaces. I think then probably providing some seminars, some kind of a webinars, and approaching different industry stakeholders, educating them, learning from them. I think that also can be kind of a planned out. And that is where we can take it together.
And any advice to the young broking professionals who join the company? I mean, you're seeing obviously some very experienced brokers working with you and the younger brokers sort of, you know, coming into the fray. Any advice?
Not sure. I think today I've seen they're not transactional, and that's what I like about them. They see long term. They take care of their all stakeholders. So generally, I think they're doing a great job. Not sure, if we can advise them more.
Thank you. Just switching tack to coming back to a little bit more sort of personal side of Alok Agarwal. So who is Alok outside of work? What does Alok do outside work?
So now for the last 2 years, I've learned one thing, learn to relax.
Okay.
And that I've been doing. So outside work, relax, go on a walk, which I like to do, read something, watch a little TV, spend time with friends.
Nice.
Very uninspiring, but that's what I am.
I think relaxation is probably one of the most underrated you know, things that one can do. So it's kind of nice, and you know, it's quite important to unwind after being in that kind of scrutiny on a daily basis and on a quarterly basis in your case. Any passion projects outside of work?
In terms of project, one thing which I've been, you know, I believe that we all are with quite a privileged lot, and we have to give back to society.
Yeah.
And that is, I've been working, you know, some further. I've been working in last 5-7 years. I've been working on that. That is something I want to see if I can do more of that. How it's going to evolve, that's a bit for work in progress. Yeah. But that is.
But you've been doing quite a lot of work within your firm in terms of, you know, making an impact and giving back to the society. Could you just, you know, talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So we see, and since when the CSR laws came up, we believe that we want to make use of this, you know, regulations and give back to society to the extent possible. And in 2015 itself, we started that our campuses will be accessible. So probably our campuses, in terms of people with special abilities, they can access those campuses, they can use those campuses. And we have worked last 5 years to make those campuses accessible. So that has been one thing. Then we celebrate, you know, kind of a pride march across our campuses to send a sense that, you know, everybody is equal and give a sense of equity. That's what we do. We also give back to society around our campuses, maintain some of the roads, learn, you know, kind of run computer classes for villages. If there are villages around that people, we run computer classes, educate students. That's what we constantly do. The number of initiatives we have taken, and also then we run kind of a Pavai Run is something we sponsor every year, which is again connected with the theme. Theme changes every year, 2 years, but again trying to create awareness about that theme. So this is some of the activities. There are many, you know, but there are many activities you undertake.
Excellent, and congratulations for all the initiatives. I think it's quite nice to try and set examples as well for the broader business community to kind of do the same.
That's important for us.
Yeah. So if you had to go back to the IIT campus today to pitch to the millennials, sorry, not millennials, Gen Zs, or even Gen Alphas shortly, to join real estate, what would be your pitch to them?
One thing is I would talk about growth, what is expected in real estate industry. Today, real estate industry is about 300 billion. That's about 7% of India GDP. In next 20 years, real estate industry could be anything between 4 to 5 trillion. And India GDP would be around 25 trillion, you know, maybe 10%, 15% here and there. So 7% would be about 15 to 20% next 20 years. So just imagine the kind of growth real estate industry has.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Second thing is the asset classes. Mm-hmm. 5 years back or 10 years back, we have office, residential, retail, hotels. Today we have data centers. Today we have logistics.
Yeah.
So kind of asset classes real estate industry has. So the kind of exposure you can get, that's phenomenal. This is second. Third thing is kind of work you can do. You can do capital markets, you can do investments, you can do leasing, you can do operations, whatever kind of work you like to do. Legal, everything you want to do, you can do. I'm not sure if any other industries offering these kind of a choices. Then in terms of companies which are in real estate industry, you have domestic companies, you have developers, you have private equity funds, you have global companies, Japanese, US. So real estate industry choices are unlimited. And that is what people
excellent. I'm sold.
Whatever.
Okay. Alok, if I ask you about your leadership style, you know, I mean, you've got tons of people who work for you. What would they say about you, about your leadership style?
Well, I don't know what they're going to say in front of me and behind me what they're going to say, but.
What's your philosophy?
I think philosophy in terms of people is take people along with you. That is important. understand, and you know, when you are working together, probably you have to step down in their shoes many times rather than just giving kind of a direction, just giving them dictates. Understand what they can do, what they cannot do. And you know, be a kind of a partner in their growth as well. While they work, we work for the organization, but we also need to take care of employees. And that is for senior people like us is important. So I think these three, four things is what I focus on.
So my last question to you is, if not real estate, then what would have Alok been doing?
So I never thought about real estate, ended up in real estate. And now more and more I think probably equity investor is exciting. I think if not real estate, maybe I could have been equity investor.
Equity investor.
That's what I think I've been getting excited more and more about it.
Any hot tips for the market for people watching? I'm just kidding. I'm just putting you on a spot there.
No, not in this market.
Not in this market. Stay cautious.
Stay cautious, yes.
Stay cautious. Excellent. I think, Alok, some real great nuggets coming out of that. I quite liked when you said, at the very beginning, you said, take every day as it comes and enjoy those successes. You can possibly have a plan in the mind, but you know whether you'll get there or not, who knows? So you just enjoy and be there. I think it's nice to hear the give back to the society. We did not get any tips from the market, which we are a little disappointed about, but I think it's some great perspectives on real estate. So thank you very much. It was a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashok. Thank you so much.
Okay.